Is our first speaker, who is going to be Joe.
All right, my name is Joe. And those of you who are just clapping, you really don't know what you're getting yourselves into. I say I'm an addict. My name's Joe. For purposes of anonymity, I was told that the important thing about me is that I'm an addict here. Not outside, but here the important thing about me is I'm an addict. And it doesn't matter much what my name is. The steps introduced me to little Joey Gazzo. And I've lived in a fantasy world from the time I was four until tomorrow or the next day. I'm not sure. I was a free-range child. Ron and I were talking about what that meant to us when we were children. I would get up in the morning when I was 8, 9, 10 years old, eat breakfast, grab my BB rifle, and go out in the woods. Nobody knew where I was until I came back for lunch or until I came back for dinner. And I was always wearing costumes. Costumes were important to me. When I got a little older, I got uniforms, and they were important to me. They kind of gave me an identity. They protected me from all the people out there. I understood what the rules were, and I could follow them or not follow them, depending on what day it was. At least I had some kind of identity. And I still wear costumes. This is little Joey Gazzo at the convention, speaking on the third step. You know? That's the way it is. When I worked the steps, one of the things I was told to do in the fourth step is go way back to the earliest memories and write about those up until the time I was about 14 when I started using legal drugs. And I did that, and it was kind of scary, you know. I found out about this fantasy world, and there was something itching at me I didn't really understand, and that was eventually I understood the dis-ease of addiction. So the drugs were my original cure to my dis-ease of addiction. And the costumes and uniforms were my solution, aside from drugs, to my dis-ease of addiction. I heard that term in a lot of meetings for a lot of time, for about 4 years or so, and had no idea what you all were talking about. And finally, I began to see it in myself. It was very helpful. I was able then to stop focusing on the drugs, the clean time, and focus on recovery from this disease of addiction. I say it that way because that's the way it shows up in my life. It's a dis-ease. My brain is sharing things with me like it used to, and I'm torn whether I should, like, do that or not do that, you know. My brain has shared a lot with me over the last couple of weeks. I wish y'all had been there inside my brain. It would be a lot more coherent than what I'm going to say to you today. So anyway, you know, I come to the end of the road after going to prison, after, when they finally came and got me, this is not going to sound like a low bottom deal, but I had made a lot of money in the trade. And when they finally came and got me, I had $675 in my pocket. And a very kind customs officer said, take that money and hide it someplace, because where you're going, they'll take it from you and you'll never get it back. Anyway, so I did that. Here's the thing though. This is the third step and third tradition. If it weren't for the third tradition, I wouldn't be here. I got out of a hospital in 1988 and didn't get clean until October 16, 1989. I went to meetings 5, 6, 7 a day. I went to some meetings at 7:30 in the morning. I went to meetings like there was nothing else for me to do. I went to meetings. And when I left the meetings, I went out and used again. If I wanted to. It took me almost 9 months of doing that over and over again to finally get fired by a sponsor. The sponsor said, look, you keep doing this, And I keep thinking, well, it's working for you, maybe it'll work for me. Why don't you go find somebody else to work with? And I thought he was pretty smart to do that. So I asked him for a phone number, and as I asked him for the phone number, his face turned really strange. He didn't seem to like the guy I wanted to sponsor me next. The guy I wanted to sponsor me next, I knew he knew something that I needed to find out. He had come around from 1976 to 1984 before he had gotten a year clean. So I thought to myself, now he knows how to do this. Or maybe he doesn't, since he came around all that time and didn't get clean. When I got him as a sponsor, he had 6 years clean, and I kept changing my clean date with him too. Finally, he said, like up in my face said, Joe, the only way this works is we don't use no matter what. That's the way it works. We don't use no matter what. We go to meetings. We open ourselves to a power greater than ourselves. You can call it God if you want to. We help another addict, another human being with no strength attached, and we pray. And we can't do that if we're using. You can, but it doesn't work, he said. You don't use no matter what. So, in October of 1989, I joined the Don't Use No Matter What Club. And then I used again. I was driving, those of you from D.C. will recognize this, I was driving up North Capitol Street, and I would usually make a right turn on Harrowwood. My man lived in an apartment house that was pretty much full of Catholic University students. And on the way up there, I said, if there's somebody out there, help me turn around and go home. And I did turn around and go home. And I'd like to tell you that that was the burning bush that I never used again. It's not true. Not true, I did use again. Finally, I did stop and stayed stopped. And so, since I didn't use for a while, and didn't die, I have some clean time. Recovery is another matter. Another matter for sure. When the Green and Gold book came out, I got it. I wanted to be, you know, I went to school. I've been to a lot of schools. I've got a lot of education. I can read. I got to read this new book, new literature. Oh boy, I'm going to find something out. I went right to the third step. Honestly, I went right to the third step. I read it, and it kept repeating itself. It was saying the same thing over and over and over again. I went to my sponsor and told him, I don't understand. This is bullshit. Excuse me. I'm sorry there are young people here. This is wrong. I don't get it. And he said, here's the deal. The reason it repeats itself is because that's what's going to happen in your life. You're going to have to work that third step over and over and over again. Oh, how? I didn't have a clue what was going on. Then life started to happen for me. I like the fact that in the basic text it talks about emphasis on making a decision, not emphasis on following through with it. Now I can make the decision, I can take it back, I can da-da-da-da-da-da. So what happens? You know, one of the first things that happened was my sponsor didn't like the job I had. I was a fundraiser for a nonprofit, a small one, and he thought all I was doing is raising money to pay my salary. And I called him some names, talked about his mother on the telephone one night, and he told me to go away and find somebody else to sponsor him. 5 minutes later, I called him back and begged forgiveness. Okay? That's kind of a third step, right? Looked like it to me in retrospect. I didn't know it then. I know now that I was working third steps in life long before I ever wrote anything about the third step. My current sponsor and I have a kind of difference of agreement about this because she came to meetings regularly and used and didn't want to get clean. She just was coming to meetings because the alternative was too bad for her. I came to meetings wanting to join this club. I really wanted to stay here. I wanted to be here. I'm looking out now and I'm seeing my playmates. I'm seeing other free-range children that I could have been out in the woods with a BB gun with or whatever. And I wanted to stay. I didn't know how. I wanted the switch to be turned off. I wanted to not want to use or not think about using. And, you know, there is no switch, so what am I going to do? So, he didn't like my job. We're arguing about it. He says, the only time you're ever happy, Joe, the only time you're ever smiling is when you're talking about boats. I spent a lot of time around boats during the time that I spent in the trade. And I like boats. I like being out on the ocean. I like being out on the bay. I like being out on the river. I like it a lot. And I told him I couldn't do that. It would never work. I didn't know how. And he said, put on your costume and go talk to the people. And they'll hire you whether they want to or not, because God is working in your life. Nah, Johnny, it's just not going to happen. The next thing I know, I'm working at Boat U.S. for $6.50 an hour, but I'm working at Boat U.S. Okay, well, okay, fine. Now, what am I going to do next? Because I'm not living at $6.50 an hour for long. I've got to sort out some way to get licensed by the government to do something better than that. So I set out to do that. One of my problems, one of the symptoms of my dis-ease is I want to know what's going to happen next. I want to know what's going to happen when I get there, but I want to know before I get there. I want to know what it's going to look like. So I'm going down the ICW on my little boat, and I call a marina. And I say, I want to stay there tonight. What's it like? He says, where are you? So I tell him where I am, and I'm about 15 miles from the marina. He says, you know, don't worry about it. Call me when you're here. I don't need to talk to you now. Like, but I want to know what it's going to be like when I get there. Why can't you tell me? So giving up that, letting go of that attitude, and finding the confidence in myself to go ahead to whatever it was and find out what was going to happen when I got there, not before, but when I got there, was a big step for me. I spent 7 months alone on that boat, and I learned what it's like to be alone with my head. Nobody else to blame when things went wrong. Nobody else to fix it when things were broke. All by myself. It was the best thing I ever did in life. Long story short, I made an application to the Coast Guard. I'm sitting at home one day working temp jobs. I get a phone call. And the Coast Guard guy on the other end, the petty officer, says, you say you have a conviction, a felony conviction, and we believe you, but we need documentation. Can you send us the case file? He says, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Just send us the case file. So I thought, well, I still have my parole officer's number. I'll give him a call and see if he's still alive and working. And he was. And he sent us the case file. And the fools give me a license. Go figure. Would it have happened after 9/11? Not a chance. Not a chance. But Johnny Green told me that the only time I was smiling is when I was around boats. So I took a step out, off the cliff, didn't know what was going to happen, didn't know what it was going to be like when I got there, and it worked out. And I didn't know that was a third step then. I had no idea. Did not have a clue that that was a third step. I can see it now. I can see it now for sure. So anyway, I get this job, and I'm living in Southeast D.C., Capitol Hill East, they call it, because they want to gentrify it. That's where I'm living with my wife of 47 years. I've been married 47 years. What is wrong with that woman? You know, she went through all that madness with me. Went through madness with just her and a dog and some cats while I was in prison. And she invited me to come live with her at the end of that term. What is wrong with her? This is either the most blessed relationship in the world or the sickest. And we don't have a clue which it is. One or the other. We don't know. She goes to Al-Anon and she has Velcro on her forehead and the back of her hand. So she can go like this. it's a good thing. So anyway, I'm working this job. It's a reasonably good job. It's not paying me all that much, but I'm progressing in it. And there's a lot of hard work involved, and I'm the oldest guy there. You know, I'm fucking 71 years old. Okay? Not then, but I am now. I'm the oldest guy there then, and he's got me down in the boatyard underneath a sailboat with a big sander, a vacuum sander, and I'm by myself, and I'm supposed to finish it by noon. So I come riding back in my truck and start cursing him out, and he fires me. So I go on home, you know, and I call Johnny. I said, I got fired. He says, well, you got to get another job. You got to quit. You got to... He says, no, John, I think I'll work a third step on this. And later that evening, I get a call from the general manager saying I should see him at 7:30 in his office. So I go in there, and he tells me, you have got to learn how to get along with Tim. You're not fired. You're going to stay here. You just got to learn how to get along with Tim. And I learned how to get along with Tim. I learned how not to shoot myself in the foot. You see? So, you know, the other part of this business of coming back over and over and over again, we were talking about that Thursday night. Keep coming back was an important thing for me to hear. Sometimes it's sarcastic, you know, you'll say something, you'll say, keep coming back. But I heard it, no matter what, I heard it. And the only time that anybody ever challenged me when I was high in a meeting, I was a group that's no longer in existence called Hidden and Sticking. And the meeting was almost over, and the woman who was leading it leaned across the table and looked me dead in the eye and said, excuse me, sir, is there anything you'd like to share with us tonight before we close? I said, no, I'm good, I'm fine, I'm perfect, I'm just, yeah, no, nothing at all. The point being that if it weren't the fact that the only thing I have to do to come into Narcotics Anonymous and call myself a member is have a desire to stop using, it was vitally important to me, you know. I was working a third step every time I came in the door. I was working a first, second, and third step every time I walked into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. That's what I believe. That's what I experienced. And I couldn't have done that if it weren't for the third tradition. You know, y'all wouldn't have let me be a member if it weren't for the third tradition. So anyway, I don't have any burning bushes in my life, but I do have itches. I get these kind of itches. I get this queasy feeling that something's not quite right. And in October of 2013, I went to my general doctor. You know, I've got insurance. Now I'm on Medicare, praise the Lord. And my wife's got insurance where she works. So I go to my primary care doc and I say, you know, that feel funny. I don't know exactly what it is, but would you order me a chest CT? I smoked for 55 years. So he ordered the CT, and the CT found something called a nodule. I didn't know they had nodules. They had nodules. And eventually, I was diagnosed with lung cancer in January 2014. And I've been through three surgeries and 3 months of chemotherapy since then. And as I stand here today, recent information, no cancer. When I was going through these things, God looked to me like a guy with a knife in one hand and a scope in the other and a white coat. His name was, what was his name? It doesn't really matter, does it? The surgeons and the oncologists and stuff became the power to which I turned my will and my life over to. The care of my will and my life. I think that's another important word in that step. The care of my will and my life. The idea that they are caring, loving people, or at least they're caring and competent people, and that God is in fact a caring and loving entity, being, whatever. I don't know if it's he, she, or it. All I know is it works for me when I give up, when I surrender to it. It works for me. So I went through all this stuff, and the second surgery, where they took out the lower half of my left lung. They made some mistakes and left some air leaks. So I blew up like a balloon. I looked like the Pillsbury Doughboy. And the only solution for that was to take a piece of muscle and wrap it around the lung and stitch it on. So it was split from my armpit down to my waist. And I got to tell you, it hurts. Still hurts. It hurt then. For those of you who may be dealing with that kind of situation in your life in the future, I can tell you this. Pain medication works. Pain medication feels like other drugs. Guarantee the feeling will be there. What's my solution? I went to every meeting that I usually went to consistently. If I was not in the hospital, I was going to meetings. How could I do that? I reached out for help. The number of people that came forward and gave me rides, insisted on giving me rides. I didn't even have to ask for it. They're like, I'm taking you to the meeting tonight. You're coming with me. What time should I be there? It was amazing. You know, I had never really had a situation where I had to reach out for help that way. But I did then, and it worked. And I'm very, very grateful that it worked. I don't call myself a grateful addict because I'm not always grateful. I am grateful that I was asked to be here. Gratefulness, gratitude is an action thing. It's not a thought or a feeling. When I do things that indicate I'm grateful, I do feel gratitude, that's for sure. I feel gratitude that I just got the sign that there's only 5 minutes left and I don't have to talk to y'all anymore because this is not my thing. I don't do conventions and I don't do speakers meetings if I can avoid it. But I seem to have managed to muddle through. You know, just keep in mind when you look at somebody that's ragged and dirty coming through the door or nodding out in a meeting that the third tradition is what keeps us safe. The third tradition is what allows us to fail and come back. You know, to fail and come back. That's what allowed me to fail and come back. And I really didn't want to stay. And I'm so glad that I've stayed for as long as I have. Thank you for letting me share.